Maybe you can't judge a book by its cover, but the people who write book cover blurbs won't stop trying to sell them that way. This point was brought home to linguist Jeffrey Nunberg recently when he was looking for a good read.
A number of years ago, Bruce J. Friedman wrote a charming story called The Big Six. The hero, Mr. Lorsey, has a job writing jacket copy for a publisher of paperback novels, and the secret of his success is that he always uses the word vortex somewhere in the blurb. Like, they were caught up in a vortex of twisted love and strange desires, two people at odds with a world they had never made. On one occasion, Mr. Lorsey actually risked using vortex twice in the same blurb. Their lives a vortex of panic and infidelity, the bed they slept in was a vortex of shame and lust. Mr. Lorsey fully expects that his boss will catch on and fire him for that one, but instead he's given a raise. The story came rushing back to me after all these years, when I came home the other night with a kind of headache that makes even Jeopardy seem like an intellectual ordeal. I started sorting through my unread novels to find something to get me through to bedtime. The first thing I pulled down was the Bantam edition of Pat Conroy's Prince of Tides, which I recall somebody lending to me with a strong recommendation. I checked out the blurb on the back cover. Pat Conroy has created a huge, brash thunderstorm of a book, stinging with honesty and resounding with drama. Now, whenever you see a blurb that describes the publication as an adjective-adjective noun of a novel, you know you're dealing with a novel that fairly cries out to be called a blockbuster. Ray Kinsella's Shoeless Joe, which was the basis for the movie Field of Dreams, was described by the LA Times as an utterly disarming, whimsical knuckler of a novel. Another way to tell you're dealing with this sort of novel is when you find strings of words connected by and with no commas. According to the Boston Globe, Russell Banks' Continental Drift covers the issues of race and dreams and love and sex and power and fantasy in America. When reviewers are not joining adjectives with and, they run to alliteration. For example, one reviewer described John Barth's Giles Goatboy as a big, bawdy, and boisterous blockbuster of a book. This is as impressive in its way as Mr. Lorsey's Double Vortex. Publishers naturally like the word bawdy, which means that the book has lots of funny scenes with redeeming literary merit. When the sex scenes aren't particularly funny, you say that the book is provocative or searing. In fact, vortex is only one of what must be hundreds of English words that have been saved from extinction only by the assiduous efforts of blurb artists. Where, besides on the dust jacket of a book, are you likely to see anything described as a mirthful, rollicking romp? Or see an author described as a haunting and lyrical new voice in American letters? And why does every review of an Ann Tyler novel end with, and above all, true? Doesn't she make them all up out of her own head? But as I said, I had this towering, blistering blockbuster of a headache, so I finally went to bed with The Sun Also Rises. It was a copy I'd bought at a garage sale, the first paperback edition published by Bantam in 1949. The jacket copy says, "Brawny Jake Barnes wanted only one thing, Brett Ashley, but neither she nor any woman could ever be his. It was truly a rotten way to be wounded." It goes on, "Only Hemingway, master of unspoken secrets, could successfully tackle this daring theme. Only Hemingway, greatest of realists, could weave this shattering novel of dissipation and passion and pleasure-mad novel." Well, it didn't live up to its jacket copy, but it wasn't half bad.
Jeffrey Nunberg is a sizzling, fiery barn burner of a linguist associated with Stanford University and the Institute for Research on Learning in Palo Alto, California.